yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Here's Fernando Tatis. He swings, sends one high and deep to left. He's watching, so are 44,000 others. Oh, what a start for the Padres as Tatis leaves the building, and this place is on its feet. Padres lead it 2-0.
There we go. Postseason on the way, underway. Fernando Tatis goes deep. Kyle Ravitch with the call. That was your home run call of the day at BB Isn't Boring. Follow all the frivolity that is the postseason at BB Isn't Boring. And there was plenty of frivolity to go around, at least in four cities. Three of them were teams that were on the road. In fact, Fernando Tatis saying to go to Padres, they were the only team, the only home team to win of the four games to kick off the postseason. Detroit beat Houston, Kansas City beat Baltimore, the Mets beat the Brewers. The Padres, as we said, they were the only team, and they beat the Braves. All right, well, what were the takeaways? There's a ton of takeaways, but one of the things that I'm fascinated by and I'm focusing on in this podcast is how do you get pitchers through the postseason. We all love the stories of pitchers who just dominate, get on my back, boys, and they carry their teams through the World Series. We saw it with the Texas Rangers last year, Nathan Eovaldi and Jordan Montgomery. We've seen it in years past, and now we're trying to identify which pitchers, which starting pitchers are in position, are going to be able to do that. And one of the things that we have to remember and we can't forget is how many extra innings we're talking about. It is kind of crazy. It can be kind of crazy. Go back to the preeminent example, Madison Bumgarner, 52 2/3 extra innings in 2014. Extra innings, what I'm saying is that postseason innings on top of the regular season. Curt Schilling, 48 1/3 extra innings in 2001. Josh Beckett, a young Josh Beckett, just starting his career Josh Beckett, threw 42 2/3 innings in the 2003 postseason. So, you better be ready. And we had some great starting pitching performances to kick things off. Great starting pitching. So there's already some candidates to say, hey, you know what? Everybody get on my back, teams. I'm going to be the ace. I'm going to be the dominant guy, the guy that baseball loves so much. Tarek Skubal is at the head of that list, obviously. Six innings, no runs. Corbin Burns, a guy who you would expect to be really good. He was really good. 8 innings, 1 run in the loss. Cole Reagans before the calf cramp, 6 innings, no runs. Michael King, absolutely dominant for the San Diego Padres. 7 innings, no runs, 12 strikeouts. But now they have to keep going. Now they have to be prepared to go through the postseason. Understand this. This year, it was tied for the fewest amount of pitchers to go 200 innings. That was 4. Only 2 of those guys are going to be in the postseason. That's Seth Lugo and Zach Wheeler. So keep an eye on them. Aaron Nola, right on the edge. He's also in the postseason. 199 1/3 innings going in the postseason. So there are guys who are coming close to that. But if you measure it out compared to some of these other years, then where are you going to be landing? So in other words, will Seth Lugo or Zach Wheeler or Aaron Nola end up with, are they prepared to do 230 innings? Well, last year you had 20 pitchers in the World Series. End the World Series with, 11 pitchers end the World Series with 200 innings or more. That's after the regular season just saw 5 of them. So 6 pitchers went into the 200 innings ending world in the postseason and had to manage that. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out there, but it is a very, very real thing. And if you want to talk about the pitchers who had the most innings of all time, well, let's go back to 2000 301, Curt Schilling 305 innings, Randy Johnson 291 innings, both in, again, both in 2001. Now, the here and the now. How do you get these pitchers through this? Are these pitchers going to be ready to do this? It's a great story right now. Scooble and Burns and Reagans and King, all of them. Okay, you know, even with Burns losing, maybe, who knows? Maybe we look back and we say one of these guys is the guy like the Jordan Montgomery or the Nathan Eovaldi. And by the way, Eovaldi was the guy that last year led all pitchers in postseason innings, 36 and two-thirds extra innings on top of what he did in the regular season. Who is going to be that guy? How do you get that? So we have a couple people who know what's what when it comes to this topic on the podcast today. Kyle Snyder makes his return, Tampa Bay Rays pitching coach. As a player, he's seen it. As a pitching coach, he's seen it. Whether it's on a team who's participating or just from afar as a pitching coach, he is going to give you a great perspective of how pitching coaches, how staffs, how organizations are looking at this. It is a great guy to talk to. He's always great to talk to. Kyle Snyder is awesome, and to this time is no exception. And then I'm going to get into Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen is the guy who far and away pitched the most innings last year. He ended up 243 and two-thirds innings. 243 and two-thirds innings last year. That's old school. That is far and away not even close, the most innings. And a big part of that, of course, was what he did in the postseason. Was one of those pitchers who pitched more than 20 extra innings on top of what he did in the regular season. Zach Gallen is also in the podcast. Zach Gallen is also a guy who can give us some insight into how you get through that, how you should approach that. So, timely podcast, great podcast, great way to start the postseason. We're here to educate, inform, enlighten, offer insight, all of the above. I am so just jacked and pumped to see where this postseason's going. We're just getting going. Now it's just a tidal wave of awesomeness when it comes to baseball games every single day. And the way that we kicked off the first day was a perfect example of that. And also a perfect example of what we're talking about, how this can be the opportunity for pitchers to make themselves historic by saying, I am going to lead you. I am going to pitch more innings than anybody else. I'm going to dominate more than everybody else. And when I pitch in game 7 of the World Series, you know that you're going to win. We've seen it before. Now we're going to have to wait to see if we're going to see it again. All right. Perspective. Here we go. The best you're going to get. Here's Kyle Snyder, and we're going to follow that up with Zach Gallen. You pitched a lot of innings last year, over 240. And I like talking about, I think that one of the most underrated stats for position players is games played. I do, because it shows the ability to actually be good enough to play and then play every day. And the grind of this season isn't like it was back in the day. It just isn't. Then to pitch as many, you just don't see pitchers pitch over 240 innings overall. I think that's a testament to you. And I think that guys are chasing it. Like, I talk to guys, pitchers, who are trying to crack through that barrier. For you, having done it, having gone through that gauntlet, now looking back, what would you say to pitchers? Because it seems like a lot in this day and age. And also, like, when we see a lot of pitchers get to 140, 150, they can sort of hit the wall. Because, again, in the minor leagues, you aren't doing this. So what would you say to people?
I mean, the one thing that I've noticed about the, like, stamina of it, like, just, like, to your point of hitting the wall, there's no way to train or practice for it other than just doing it.
Really?
Like, yeah, that's – so, like, I remember – so my first year of pro ball, I got to – I had gone, you know, 3 levels, and it comes about the All-Star break in, like, July or whatever, and I get a call from one of the guys at my agency. He's like, how you feeling? I'm like, I feel great. Like, I never felt, you know, better in my career. It was probably at, I don't know, 90 to 100 innings, something like that. sure enough, the next week, my legs felt like just cement blocks. And I'm like, he said on the phone, he said, just wait.
Oh, really?
Right there. You just wait. I'm like, all right. So I didn't think it was going to happen. So middle of July, it hits me. I'm like grinding for the last month and a half or whatever it is. Then the following year, I'm like, all right, this will be the year I'll feel good all the way through the stretch. Middle of August, it gets me. And I'm like, I can't. There's nothing I can do. Not until I had gone 2, maybe 3 years the following year of, like, throwing a full season's worth was I, like, okay, I'm good by, like, the end of September. Mm-hmm. And then last year being in the playoffs was different. I think, you know, the playoffs, you're just kind of running on adrenaline. But, like, yeah, I don't think there's any amount of conditioning, you know, running, whatever, lifting that, like, can prepare you to do it other than just doing it. So
did you have, in last year, you went, I would imagine that you went to stem to stern, like, and beginning to end, because of how they used to do it really was, we know this is going to be a long season, we're going to build in a break.
No, I went the whole, I mean,
yeah,
it's from spring training. I mean, I started spring training a little bit later, like probably didn't get on the mound until like the first or second week of March, but like, or like in a game, I should say. But yeah, like start to finish, like no breaks.
So when you get to October, like you said, you're running on adrenaline. That's another thing that it advice for people, because I think that people don't, everyone focuses on 200 innings. Yeah. Well, if you get to the postseason,
you're looking at another, if you go to the World Series, I mean, I think I threw an extra 33 innings.
So, so looking back, how did that feel? Like, you can look back at it.
Yeah, now. I felt good. That was the thing. Like, people would kind of ask me after the whole run had happened and they're like, how you feeling? And my first thing was, I was like more mentally exhausted than physically exhausted, because you're, I mean, even when you're not pitching, you're on edge every pitch, like you're watching.
Well, that's the
game,
thing. So every,
like,
single
every pitch, like it,
yeah,
doesn't matter. Even when I would like try and take a break from the game, like if the day I wasn't pitching and go inside, like you're still watching the TV and you're on edge. So it's like people were asking me how you feel. I'm like, I'm mentally, like, you get more exhausted. And then probably about 3 or 4 days after the last game of the World Series, it all hit me, like, physically. And then I was, like, on the couch for, like, 2 days. Like, I was just exhausted. So I was like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I was exhausted. I couldn't get up. People were like, you want to golf? And I'm like, I'm out for, like, 2 days. Like, you got to give it. So but I felt great. I mean, outside of feeling, my delivery wasn't in a spot where I wanted it to be, but, like, physically, I was like, I feel good, and, like, I feel good. I can go out there. Like, I didn't feel like I threw 210 innings.
Did it hit? Like you said, there's nothing really you can do to prepare, like, for that, right? Mm-hmm. Mentally, though, there's probably nothing you can do with that, too. And I would imagine, like, the hyper-focus. I love postseason baseball. Yeah. I love watching you guys last year. It's because every single pitch is like, this is the great thing about baseball, right?
Yeah.
We can talk about every single pitch, and then here comes another one. And for you, that's hyper-focus. So was it what you thought it would be, or like, I don't even know what...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely what I imagined. I mean, it's hard. You, as a kid, you grow up and you think about the World Series. You think about all these things, but like the finer details you don't know because you haven't experienced,
yeah,
them. But like, I think the one thing that helped us was, like, down the stretch, we had to play like it was October for the last 6 weeks, like, because we had dug ourselves such a deep hole, like with our, you know, collapse in July and August was like, okay, well, we gotta get going now. So like at that point, it was like every pitch had mattered for 6 weeks up until once we got to the playoffs. Like, okay, we've been playing like this for the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. So like, what's different other than we're just playing a new opponent, and, you know, the venues change and there's a little bit more on the line. But like, our mentality was very similar from, I would say, August like 10th.
Yeah, I looked
the
it up.
Thing.
Yeah. The thing is that, so from August 25th, which, as we tape, this is when this is, it's not like you guys like had like unbelievable run. I think you were just over 500, but at the same time, you had come out from that 9-game losing streak, right? And just to keep your head above water, that you had to have that mentality.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, we knew our backs were against the wall, but we kind of had, we knew that we had left ourselves just enough room that, like, if we played like we were capable of, and how we played the first 100 games of the year, we would be fine. I mean, thankfully, we got a little bit of help at the end. You know, a couple teams lost, and we kind of backed our way in there. But, like, that was the thing. Like, we knew we were, like, we were a young team. Probably we hit the wall after game, I don't know, 100, 105. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're like, oh, man, we got our backs against the wall. Like, we got to see what happens. But we knew in the back of our minds, like, we're still a good baseball team. Mm-hmm. And we added pieces. You had a closer like Paul. You had Tommy Pham. So, like, we got better at the deadline. It was like, we just need to keep our head above water and just give ourselves just enough room to kind of get in there. Because we knew we could do what happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing. You guys are like the shot. This is, believe me, the name Diamondbacks have come up a million times at the trade deadline because, like, oh, look, if you're in it and you get in, this can happen. Yeah. And this is the world of baseball right now.
Yeah.
So for what will forever be that thing, which is a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great for baseball. I mean, obviously, you know, you get more teams trying to compete. And you just, you know, you see what happens. Like, I mean, I wouldn't have imagined it to happen the way that it did. But, like, yeah, I mean, you just need a shot to get in. And, you know, next thing you know, you could be playing in the World Series. And you were, at one point in time, 2 games under .500 with 50 games to play, awesome. 60, 40 games to play. So, yeah.
So Hayes came on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and I gave him the gift of telling him that you guys are going to win the World Series. So thank you. You're welcome.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. You're welcome.
I'll come find you in November.
I get stories. And ask Hazen, say, how often is Rob Bradford right? And he'll tell you some stories.
All right, I'll ask him. I'll ask him. When I see him today,
Ask him that. And look at his right wrist and see what's on it.
All right.
It's a baseball's important wristband, and it's not coincidence that we sit here, since he's worn it, you guys haven't lost. But my question is, so, like, how does it feel for you? How does it feel different? Because as we, you know, you guys have the best record since July 1st and best record since the trade deadline, all of that. How does it feel different for you?
I think one, we've just become a deeper, more complete team, just like on paper, like just on the field. Like, you could just see that, like, you know, last year we were running 3 starters out in the playoffs, and we got, you know, a guy won the World Series last year. We had to move into the bullpen. Like, that's how deep we are in the rotation.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, right now we have some injuries, so, like, we're not as deep, but, like, full strength. I mean, we can beat you from both sides of the plate, left or right. But I think the biggest thing is just, like, the culture of – and we touched a lot on this, like, in the last couple
years. I talked with you about this last year, like, the belief – getting you guys to believe, right?
So it just kind of started with, like, in – I mean, 21 was a horrific year. I mean, we lost 110 games, and it was, like, we weren't – I wasn't really sure. Like, I was kind of in this weird spot of, like, I was a young guy, but I had been here 3 years now. And, you know, me and Merrill were kind of the same thing, and we're like, okay, is the next wave coming? And I remember talking to Hayes and Namiel, and they're like, just give us some time. Like, we got guys coming. They're just, you know, a step behind right now. And then you kind of saw at the end of 22, and Torrey kind of challenged us, like, hey, this is – we need to build the culture here. Like, that's what this – that's how you're going to turn this thing into what we hope to be a perennial contender. It's like, it's about culture. So last year, we kind of got the right pieces in place, and you can kind of see just the vibe in the clubhouse, the vibe around the team. Like, the guys – it was very loose. Guys just joked around. Like, a lot of the guys, the young guys, were familiar with each other, so, like, they didn't feel like they were coming into a clubhouse unsure of how it was going to be. And then this year, I mean, the front office did a great job of that, and guys like Jock and Gino, like, guys that fit in the culture, help the culture. And then I think just our experience from last year of knowing that we started off slow this year, we could still achieve our goals. So I think a lot of guys were just like,
and also that you
keep our head
above
water.
You can go up against, you know, these behemoths, and, you know, I've said this before, where Torrey before 2023, where it's like, I'm like, give me your speech to the team.
Yeah.
It's like, let them buy their teams, right?
Yeah.
But, like, you can say that.
Yeah.
But now it's like, okay, we don't even need that speech anymore.
No, I think now it's just kind of like, I think we understand our identity, like, who we are. And what's funny is that it's changed from last year to this year. I mean, last year was a lot of, like, chaos, like, getting on, stealing bases, like, doing all that kind of stuff. This year it's not as much, but it's still the same kind of, like, let's get on base, let's work tough at bats. And then you got a guy like Gino hitting the 7-hole that, like, length, just from a pitcher standpoint, I mean, you're lengthening the lineup all the way to that point. and he's, you know, driving runs. And so, yeah, it's just, I think the guys just love being around each other, and it's just a lot of fun. And obviously it helps when you're winning and, you know, everything. Winning's the best perfume. But, I mean, even with these guys getting hurt, it's like next man up.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's all just attributed to me for the culture, really.
By the way, you just hit on your next sponsorship. Winning is the best perfume.
Winning is the best perfume.
Cologne for men.
Yeah,
winning. It's winning.
Called winning. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, the ideas are popping. I love it. I really appreciate you taking a lot of this time.
The last thing,
if I could, Peter Gamps, I don't know. Predictably, he's a big fan of yours for multiple reasons.
Yeah. Tar Heel. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're a Tar Heel, you immediately get a head start on everybody.
100%. Right? Yeah.
But he was talking about your, like, attention to detail, preparation, and then how you actually took notes in class in North Carolina. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think I want to sing your praises in that regard.
I don't think my notes work too well.
No?
my class notes.
Yeah.
I said to my mom, I said, is eligible good for you? Because I was always a good student in high school. But when I got to college, I was like, I don't see this school thing really going anywhere for me. So I said, is eligible good? She said, just make it respectable. And I said, all right, that's fine.
What a mom.
Yes, just make it respectable, I said. So, I wasn't lighting the world on fire. But, I started taking notes on hitters probably my sophomore year. I think my sophomore year of college.
Every single hitter?
Every hitter I could find video on.
Okay.
So and at that point in time, I mean, you're talking about maybe one game that a guy plays on ESPN3 that, like, somehow against a left-handed pitcher. So it's not even the same. Like, but at that point in time, I had been doing a lot of work at the hitting facility, training facility that I grew up at. So I was tossing, like, I would toss, like, younger kids' balls, like, in the cage and stuff like that, and try to read their swings. So I got really good at reading, like, you know, lower age swings.
Yeah.
And the holes kind of played the same even in college. They get a little bit harder to read up here. But so then I was like, okay, I'm going to read swings. I'm going to watch. I would take notes. Like, I got notes of, like, Pavin Smith in my notebook, like, back when he was at Virginia. Like, all these guys. I mean, I got Juan Soto and guys that I saw in the, you know, Gulf Coast League. So, like, I started taking notes and just kind of carried it through. Like, it was always a thing. Like, I was trying to find any edge that I could, and that was through trying to read swings or take down at bats, like charting at bats. And, you know, and then it started, you know, I get to the big leagues and you have all this information at hand, and Dan Heron does a great job for us here, and it's like he's putting together stats and numbers and trends and things like that that we like to see, and then I kind of do my own and put it together. And
Is it like actual writing, or is it like on a,
yeah, so he'll type his out, like, on a, we'll get a card, and then I'll write mine down
in notebooks. So you have, like, stacks of notebooks?
So it's changed over the years. So, like, there's been times where I'll do, like, when I was in Miami, I would look, whatever the algorithm they had that would spit out these numbers, I would just write up sequences that I thought were good sequences for guys. So, like, I would do, like, a four-pitch sequence, and then I started doing... then I would write each, like, pitch, like, where I, you know, where I wanted to throw it to a guy or whatever. Then I started doing, like, heat maps to myself, and then I'm doing, so, like, now at this point in time, I'm just writing it. But yeah, I probably have, like, two or three, like, probably good sized notebooks that are
all
filled,
right.
Like, yeah, so there's some good stuff in there. Like, I went back and looked at one, you know, probably a year ago. I think Nick Pecora had me look through it, and there was some, like, some big leaguers in a college.
Really?
Yeah, like, I mean, Juan Soto was in there, Cunha was in there when I played him in the minor league.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, it was it was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you have to have good handwriting. So
I do. I'm very.
Do you
anal
really?
About my handwriting.
Look at you.
I'm very anal.
Well dressed and good handwriting.
Yes, it's the thing. I don't know. Catholic school. It's probably was a Catholic school, dude. To you.
Well, I appreciate it, and I promise if we do start the Cologne winning, you will get a cut of it.
All right, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.